After we ate, I jumped up to help clear the table. I scraped the plates and stacked them in the sink. Davina gave a little smile, like the way you might smile at a baby that tried to do something grown, like play the piano.
Don't worry about the kitchen, your company.
I swear to God I didn't come over here just to have sex with Davina. I swear to God that it wasn't what I came over here planning for. Did I come here hoping for it? I can't lie and say I wasn't starving for a woman, like Walter warned me not to be. But I was also starving in general. I was starving for my mama's cooking, been starving for it since the day I left for college. Davina Hardrick had invited me to dinner. If all we had done was eat, I would have left with more than I arrived with.
You want coffee?
She asked me. I shook my head no.
Another drink?
Yeah, I said, and she poured me another one, paler this time.
Don't want you to get a DUI, she said,
and I was disappointed that she was already thinking about sending me home.
Can I ask you something,
she said,
about when you were gone?
You know I didn't do it.
I know, she said. Nobody around here thought you did it. It was just the wrong race and the wrong time. Police are shady as hell. That's why everybody is locked up.
As a salute, I tipped my drink and finished in one hot gulp. I held out my glass to Davina.
One question.
As she fell serious, I braced myself for another question about Celestial. Yes?
When you were gone, did you know someone named Antoine Guillory? Full name Antoine Frederick Guillory?
Why? I said. That's your man? She shook her head.
My son.
No, I said, with condolence in my voice. If he was her son, he couldn't be more than 17 or 18 at the most. I never met him.
They call him Hopper or Grasshopper?
The nickname I did know. Hopper wasn't the youngest person there, but still too young for adult prison, too frail and too pretty. I remembered his rouged lips and hair flattened with homemade lye. I don't know him, I said again.
You sure?
I'm sure, I said. No Hopper. I held my glass out to her again. Please, ma'am? She shook her head.
I'm cutting you off. It's for your own good.
Girl, I ain't worried about no DUI. I walked over here. This town ain't no bigger than a minute.
Roy,
she said.
A lot of things have changed. You're not trying to be walking around at night. I don't know what's worse, police or everyday people. Hopper got caught up on a weapons charge. He was only trying to protect himself. 16 years old, and they charged him as an adult.
Trust me, I am not afraid. You know where I've been the last 5 years? I said, this time with a laugh that scraped my throat. You think I'm scared of some country motherfucker jumping out from behind the bushes talking about boogity boogity?
If it's a country motherfucker with a gun, yes.
Then she slapped my arm and gave me a real smile, one with dimples.
Boogity, boogity, you're so crazy. I'll get you one more, but I won't make it strong.
Fix yourself another one, too. I can't stand drinking by myself. She came back with the drinks, poured into two little glasses like the ones my mama used for orange juice.
Ran out of ice,
she said. I held my glass up, and we toasted without saying what to, and then threw it back like a shot. It felt good. Reminded me of my first job, at the company holiday party. The white folks poured top-shelf liquor, and we sucked it down like water, like there was no end to money. Davina got up and switched on some music. Frankie Beverly talking about happy feelings. She popped her fingers a couple of times as she made her way back. This time she folded herself back onto the cushion like she was showing off all her hinges.
Hey,
she said with a little play at the edge of her words. I can't say whiskey made her beautiful. Davina wasn't a PYT any more than I was a young executive. But I used to be, and she used to be. Something of it was left in us both, I think. Davina was everything I ever missed, transformed into warm brown flesh.
You okay?
I shook my head no, because that was all I could do.
What's the matter?
I shook my head again.
It's okay, she said. You just got home. It's always tiring when you get back.
She said it like I had been released from the army or the hospital. In a motion like a librarian, Davina touched her hand to her lips, and I leaned in behind it. Celestial, I couldn't help thinking of her, isn't a small woman. She is big-boned and stacked, but not soft like Davina, who felt like the robes at a 4-star hotel. I tried holding myself back, because I didn't want to reach for her like a caveman, and I can say that every moment I spent fully clothed was a miracle. I kissed her deep when I let myself go, driving my tongue in her mouth, finding the spicy flavor of whiskey and liking it. She let her fingers roam around my body, as dainty as a firefly but with healing in her hands, like a storefront preacher. She worked her way under my shirt, and the feel of her very cool palms on my hot back was electric. In the bedroom, we didn't undress each other. We took off our clothes in our own separate patches of darkness. Davina hung her dress in the closet with a tinkle of hangers, and then she slid herself in bed beside me, smelling of whiskey but also like cocoa butter. She turned on her side and let her hair tumble into my face. I pulled back from its plastic texture because I didn't want to touch anything that wasn't real. I yearned to rub against something breathing. I craved something alive. She raised her thigh up to rest on my hip.
"You okay?"
she whispered. "Yeah," I said. "You?"
"I'm okay."
"I'm sorry about your son."
"I'm sorry about your mother."
For normal people, talking about the lost would put out the fire. But for me, it was like kerosene, gasoline, and a blast of pure oxygen. I kissed her again, shifting to position myself over. Looking down at her outline in the dark, I felt myself wanting to explain again. But I could never tell her that I didn't want to fuck her like a man who just got out of jail. I wanted to do it like a man who was home visiting his family. I wanted to do it like a local boy made good. I wanted to fuck like I had money still. Like I had a nice office, Italian shoes, and a steel watch. How can you explain to a woman that you want to fuck her like a human being? I wouldn't call myself scared, but I hovered there, supporting my weight on my forearms, honestly unsure as to what to do next. I wanted to please her, not make her holler my name or anything ignorant like that. I wanted to make a good impression. She said she didn't believe that I raped that woman in the piney woods, and, but isn't there always a little seed, the second side that every story is supposed to have?
"Baby,"
Davina said, reaching up and crossing her arms over my back, pressing us together. Relying on muscle memory, I used my knee to spread her legs, but she escaped me, lying on her side, facing me. She pushed my chest with her index finger, and I lay on my back.
"Not yet,"
she said, using the flat of her hand to nudge me down when I tried to sit up and reach for her. Davina took care of me. That's the only way that I can tell it. 2 days after I got out of prison, she laid me out on her bed and took care of me. With hand and mouth, she touched my entire body, leaving no small parcel of skin I loved. She moved over and under and maybe even through me. Whichever part of me she wasn't loving was on fire, hoping it would catch her attention next. You don't know what you need until somebody gives it to you exactly the way you need it gave. When she was twined around me in such a way that her foot was near my face, I dipped my head to kiss the arch. How someone that grew up here in Elo could have such baby feet, I didn't know. Celestial had smooth feet, too. The thought of my wife stirred something in me, and I sprang up like I was waking up from a nightmare. Davina paused, and whatever light was in the room reflected from her eyes.
"You all right?"
"No," I said.
"Come here,"
she said, lying on her back and holding out her arms. Then she called me baby, in the way that some women do. Making it their own one-word language, meaning whatever she needed it to mean. This time it was an invitation. It was as though she said, "Please." She wrapped her legs around my waist and I held on to her because my life depended on it. "Baby," she said again. "You got a rubber?"
"I think so,"
she said.
"In the medicine cabinet."
"In the bathroom?"
"Yeah."
"Do I have to?" Davina was quiet in the dark. I rose up on my elbows and tried to see her, but the moonlight didn't fall on her face. "You want me to, I'll get up and get it," I promised. But I was kissing her again, biting softly on her sweet bottom lip. "Do we need it?" I was begging her, whether she knew it or not. I ached to do this, touch another person, no plastic in between. It was like it felt to touch her real hair, growing crinkly at the base of her scalp. It was the difference between talking on the phone and speaking breath to breath. "Please," I heard myself say, I'll pull out, I promise, please. We were still touching. She hadn't shoved me off of her or even drawn her knees together. Baby, I said, and it was me speaking the secret language this time.
It's okay,
she said at last.
It's okay, baby. I'm safe.
Celestial. Gloria taught me to pray when I was 3 years old. She knelt beside me, showed me how to press my palms together under my chin like a cherub. Church was her thing, not my father's. There is a certain type of Christian woman who can't resist a godless man, keeping his soul safe on her knees. Sometimes I wish I were like her, born to save a man. Then I could follow my mother's breadcrumb trail. Now I lay me down to sleep. Gloria almost sang the words, and I repeated, a little baby echo, eyes screwed tight. Before Amen, I opened my eyes and asked her to explain, I pray the Lord my soul to take. She said that it was up to God to see if you got to wake up the next morning, to decide if you're afforded another day. If you died in the night, you ask to go with him back up to heaven. Or at least this is how I took it. Stricken, I lay in my canopy bed, afraid to even blink my eyes for fear of falling into an eternal sleep. Every night she put me to bed this way, the two of us chanting. As she knelt beside me, I prayed the way she expected, but when Gloria had gone, I recanted, negotiating to keep my soul for myself. Somewhere it is written that your sins fall on your parents, mostly on your mother, until you're 12 years old. After that, your trespasses are on your own scorecard. Once I had a choice in the matter, I seldom accompanied my mother to services, preferring the easy company of my father. But always, I say my prayers. When I lived alone, I spoke the prayers aloud, but now that Andre shares my bedroom, I move my lips around the words, but I don't give them air. I pray for Roy. I ask for his safety. I ask for his forgiveness, although in the clean light of morning I know I have done nothing wrong. I also pray for Andre, and I ask him to forgive me for asking for forgiveness. I pray for my father. And I pray that I'll figure out how to be his daughter again. My mother taught me that we have no secrets from God. He knows our feelings because he made them. When you confess your sins, he will bless you for your courage. He will bless you for your humility. He blesses you when you're on your knees. God must know that in the bottom of my jewelry case, snapped into a felt box, is Roy's missing tooth. A root woman would know what to do with it. Even I, not talented in the unseen, can feel its blazing comet energy in the palm of my hand. But I have no way to harness this power or command it to my will.
Roy. I spent about 36 hours straight with Davina Hardrick in what used to be Miss Annie Mae's house. Life is full of wonders. Who would have predicted that a girl I knew only a little bit in high school would capture me so completely that I hardly remembered my way home? The only reason I left her bed at all was that she put me out so she could go to work. Between her good cooking and her good loving, I could have stayed there forever. When I finally showed up in the rumpled clothes I've been wearing, or not wearing, for the last day and a half, Big Roy was waiting on the front porch. The two Huey Newton chairs stood unoccupied while he sat on the concrete floor with his legs hanging over the side, his feet planted in the flower beds. His left hand was curled around my mama's yellow coffee cup, and the other was gripping a honey bun he ate straight from the wrapper. "You alive?" "Yes, sir," I said, bounding up the stairs. "Alive and well." Big Roy pulled his eyebrows up a couple of inches. "What's her name?" "I am sworn to secrecy to protect the innocent." "Long as she's not married, I would hate to see you go through all you've been through just to get shot by some hard leg over a woman." "You're right. My story is tragic enough as it is." "More coffee is on the stove," he he said, jerking his head in the direction of the front door. I fixed myself a cup, then returned to the porch and sat down next to my father. I looked up and down the road thinking about myself, a habit I picked up when I was gone. You sit there thinking about where you want to be, who you want to be with, what you wish you could eat. I used to sit there for as long as 20 minutes or so thinking about Kalamata olives and what I would eat them on. Now I was thinking about Davina and wondering if I could go back over there tonight. Was I cheating on Celestial, or was I cheating on my memories of her? I suppose a man in my position should receive some sort of special consideration. I won't say that Davina Hardrick saved my life with her plush thighs and her baby language, but she salvaged my something. If not my life, maybe my spirit. Big Roy spoke over the rim of the yellow coffee cup. You need to learn how to use the telephone, son. You can't just disappear, not after everything that has happened. I felt my shoulders round as I tucked my head almost to my chest. I'm sorry, Daddy, I didn't think about it. You got to remember how to consider about other people. I know. I slurped some more coffee, and he handed me the half-eaten honey bun. I tore it in two pieces and stuffed the sweet bread in my mouth, trying to get used to being myself. Big Roy said, you need to get in touch with your wife today. Let her know. Let her know what? Not about whoever got you over here grinning like Jiminy Cricket, but you got to let her know you're back home. Trust me on this, son. Whoever you've been with, she may seem special right now, but she's not your wife. I threw my hands up. I know, I know. I hadn't had a little scrap of happiness in 5 entire years, and he wasn't even going to let me have an hour of basking in the sun. But wait until you wash up, he said. He was right. I needed to make some plans to get back to Atlanta, to greet Celestial skin to skin and ask her whether we were still married. A part of me said, if you have to ask, the answer is no. Maybe I was setting myself up. 2 years of no visits is a message. Why did I need to hear it from her own lips? Whatever she had to say for herself would draw blood, and it wouldn't be a clean cut. The truth would hurt jagged, like a dog bite. But there was still the simple and undisputed fact that she didn't divorce me. If she didn't get out of the marriage officially, it was only because she didn't want to. That carried some weight in my book. Besides, even a dog bite can heal. When the phone started ringing, I hadn't gotten dressed any further than my shorts. The outdated telephone rang with a loud, metallic jangle. Daryl Wycliffe, I'm waiting on the porch, Big Roy shouted from outside. Pussyfooting to the kitchen, half-naked and barefoot, I picked up the phone and said, he's waiting on the porch. The man on the other end said, excuse me? I said, sorry, hello, Hamilton residence. The man on the other end said, Roy. Is that you? Little Roy, you want Big Roy? It's Andre. What are you doing answering the phone? I thought you weren't getting out until Wednesday. The last time I saw Dre, he wore the gray suit he would wear to Olive's wake. I could feel a crowd in the visitor's room watching him as we talked, trying to figure out the deal with us. I knew how I looked, like everyone else in there, worn jumpsuit, black skin. Everything else about me was detailed. In his dress clothes, Dre didn't look like a lawyer. He presented more like a musician who moved to Europe because cats in the States don't get jazz. I had been glad to see him. Dre was my boy. He introduced me to Celestial the first time, even though it didn't take until much later. When we got married, he stood up with me, signed his name. Now here he was on the last Sunday Olive would be above ground. Will you carry her for me? I asked. Dre breathed deep and nodded. It's painful to even recollect it, but when he agreed, I felt thankful and furious all at once. I appreciate you, I said. He whisked my words away with his piano player fingers. I'm sorry about all of this. You know, Banks is still working. Now was my turn to wave him quiet. Fuck Banks. Even if he got me out tomorrow, it'd be too late. My mama is already dead. Hearing his voice now, I felt that same mix of shame and rage I felt when he said he would carry Olive's casket. It made my throat itch, and I had to clear it twice before I spoke. What's up, Dre? Good to hear from you.
Likewise, man, he said. But you're early. We weren't expecting you for a few more days.
We, he said. we weren't expecting you. Paperwork, I said. Bureaucracy. Someone in the Department of Corrections said it was time for me to go, and so I went.
I hear you, said Dre. Does Celestial know?
Not yet, I said.
No problem, Dre said after a beat. I hope you don't mind holding steady for a couple of days.
Y'all are driving down together?
Just me,
said Dre. I hung up the phone and went back out to the porch and stood over Big Roy. From this angle, I could see the little scars on the top of his balding head. I remember my mother kissing them when he would whack his head on the light fixture that hung a little too low over the dining room table. She was crazy about that dinky little chandelier, and my father never asked her to take it down. It wasn't Wycliffe, I said. It was Andre.
What did he say that got you so shook up that you're standing outside in your drawers?
I looked down at my bare legs, turning ashy already. He says he's coming down to get me, just him.
That sound right to you?
I don't know what's right.
Big Roy said,
you better get to Atlanta and see if you have any marriage left.
He paused.
If that's what you want.
Hell yeah, it's what I want.
I had to ask because 10 minutes ago you didn't seem so sure.
The phone rang again and Big Roy jutted his chin toward the house.
That's it. It's either going to be Wycliffe or Celestial. If it's Wycliffe, tell him I'm calling in. If it's Celestial, you're on your own.
I let it jangle until she gave up. I returned to the kitchen dressed in the best apparel Walmart had to offer. Khaki pants and a knit shirt with a collar. At least I had good shoes. In the mirror, I looked like a budget Tiger Woods, but I didn't look like an ex-con. I want to go home. Big Roy was stooped in front of the refrigerator, rummaging inside.
Atlanta, you mean?
Yeah.
You made up your mind quick, he said. Andre lit some kind of fire under you.
I always knew I was going to go, but I didn't know when. Now I know that when is as soon as I can.
You set to drive?
I reached in my back pocket and pulled out my wallet. After all these years in prison storage, the leather was still soft and supple. Stuck to a punch card for lattes was my driver's license. The photo was of the successful me, cocky and sure in my button-down shirt and burgundy tie. I grinned, showing two rows of strong square teeth. According to the state of Georgia, I was clear to drive a vehicle for another 6 months. The Peach State also was under the impression that I lived at 1104 Lim Valley Road. This license was the only thing I had left from before. I held it up and let the light play off the state seal.
All set, but I don't have a car. You can take the Chrysler, Big Roy said,
opening an egg carton and finding only one lonely egg.
I need to go make groceries. Two grown men need to eat breakfast.
Daddy, how are you going to get to work without a car?
Wycliffe will ride me around if I help him with gas.
Let me think about it.
I thought you said you were ready to go.
I said I'm thinking about it.
You know, sometimes you can make up with bacon what you don't have in eggs.
Big Roy opened the fridge wider and bent himself low enough to rummage in one of the drawers.
One sorry strip of bacon. I guess you could have the egg, and I could have the bacon.
He went to the cabinet and opened it, showing neat rows of tin cans.
I got it. Salmon croquettes. You eat them, right?
I looked at Big Roy like I was meeting a stranger. His body was too large for my mother's kitchen, but he did all right, cracking a single egg one-handed and whipping it with a dainty fork.
What?
Nothing, Daddy. It's just that the entire time I was growing up, I never knew you to touch a pot or a pan. But now you put her around the kitchen like Martha Stewart.
Well, he said with his back to me as he kept whipping that solitary egg. Losing Olive left me with two options. Learn to cook or starve to death.
You could marry somebody else. I hardly got the words out. It's legal.
When I want somebody else, I find somebody else,
Big Roy said.
But if all I want is a meal, then I'll cook.
He held up the can of salmon and smiled.
They don't tell you, but a lot of foods have recipes on the back of the can to tell you how to fix it.
I watched him for a while longer, and I wondered if this is what it meant to move on, to learn to live in a new way without someone. He was busy over the little bowl and sprinkled in some cayenne pepper.
The problem is that they don't tell you how to season it right. There's a smart rule of thumb to shake some pepper any time you're dealing with a canned recipe.
Mama cooked from the top of her head, I said.
Big Roy glugged some oil into a cast-iron skillet. I still can't believe she's gone.
When he finished cooking, he divided the food onto our plates. We each got two good-sized croquettes, one half of the bacon slice, and an orange cut into triangles.
Bon appetit, I said, reaching for my fork. Oh, Lord, Big Roy began, saying grace, and I set the fork down. The food wasn't bad. It wasn't good, but it wasn't bad.
Tasty, right? Big Roy said. The can acts for breadcrumbs, but I crunched up Ritz crackers instead. Gives it a nutty flavor.
Yes, sir, I said, eating my half slice of bacon in one bite. I couldn't help thinking of Olive, a virtuoso in the kitchen. On Friday nights, she baked cakes, pies, and cookies to sell on Saturday afternoon, to be served after Sunday dinners at homes all over town. Other women practiced the same hustle, but Olive had the nerve to charge $2 above the going rate.
My desserts are worth a little extra, she used to say.
We ate slowly, engrossed in our thoughts.
You will need a haircut before you go, Big Roy said.
I ran my hand over my woolly head.
Where can I get a haircut on a Monday?
Right here, Big Roy said. You know I cut hair when I was in the army. I always keep my barber papers current. Worst comes to worst, you can always make money cutting heads.
All these years?
I cut your hair every Saturday night until you were 10 years old.
He shook his head and bit into one of the orange slices.
Seems like fruit used to have more taste to it.
That's the thing I missed most when I was in there, fruits. I paid $6 one time for a pear.
As soon as I said it, I gave a quick shake of my head to dislodge the memory, but it was dug in.
I can't forget that pear, I said to Big Roy. I drove a hard bargain for it. I sold this one dude a garbage bag. He wanted to give me just $4, but I kept pushing.
We tried to provide for you when you were in there. We may not have put as much on your commissary as your in-law, but what we gave was more to us.
I'm not comparing, I said. I'm trying to tell you something. Let me tell you this, Daddy. I sold a garbage bag, and I didn't ask myself why someone would want to pay good money for it. I just worked him till I had every cent he had, because I needed cash to get a piece of fruit. I was craving that fresh taste.
The pear had been red like an autumn leaf, and it was as soft as ice cream. I ate the whole thing, seeds, core, and stem, all of it. I ate it in the filthy bathroom because I didn't want anybody to see me with it and take it from me.
Son,
Big Roy said, and I knew just from the loosening of his face that even he knew the rest of the story. It felt like I was the only person in the world who didn't understand how a man in prison uses a garbage bag. I had tried to share the pear with Walter, but he wouldn't touch it. Not when I told him how I got it.
How was I supposed to know? I asked my father.
In prison, you learn quick that anything can be a weapon to be used against the other man or yourself. A toothbrush becomes a dagger. A chocolate bar can be melted in a homemade napalm. And a garbage bag makes a perfect noose.
I didn't know. I wouldn't have given it to him, let alone taken his money.
I remembered myself retching over the metal commode, hoping the foul odor would help me vomit that pear. But nothing came up but my own stomach juices, bitter and sharp.
I'm not blaming you, son,
Big Roy said.
Not for anything.
Then the phone started up, like it knew that we were sitting there and it refused to be ignored.
That ain't Wycliffe,
Big Roy said.
I know.
It rang until she got tired. And it rang again. I don't want to talk to Celestial until I have something to tell her.
You just told me that you're going up there. That's something to tell.
Now is the time to say the words I didn't want to say. I don't have money, Big Roy said.
I can help you some. It's close to payday, but you're welcome to what I have. Maybe Wycliffe can spot me a few.
Daddy, you already offered me your car. You can't take money from Wycliffe.
This is no time to be pig-headed. You either drive up there with what money I can scrape together for you, or you wait for Andre to come get you. It may hurt your ego to take money from a senior citizen, but it's going to hurt you more if you wait till Wednesday. It was amazing how much Big Roy reminded me of Walter right then. I missed my biological something terrible. I wondered what he would have to say about all of this. I always figured that Walter was as far away from Big Roy as two people could get, and not just that Big Roy was the kind of man to make a junior out of another man's son, while Walter was a borderline deadbeat. Knowing them both, I can see that my mama had a type, and I guess we all do. Her type of man is one with a point of view. Somebody who thinks he has figured out how this life thing works. You know, Big Roy said, there's the money your mother saved for you when you were just born. Might be a couple $100 in your name. With your driver's license and your birth certificate, you should be able to draw it down. I'll have kept all your papers in a dresser drawer. The bedroom was set up the way it was when Olive was alive. Spread on the bed was the quilt with the overlapping circles she bought at the swap meet. On the west wall was a framed picture of three girls wearing pink dresses, jumping rope. I'd bought it for her with money from my first check. It wasn't an original, but the print was signed and numbered. On top of the dresser, like a mischievous angel, was the poupe dressed in my John Johns. When Big Roy said the bank book was in her dresser drawer, he meant the one on the top right, where she kept her most personal things. I positioned my hand on the brass drawer pull and froze.
You say it?
Not yet, I said. Then I yanked the drawer like I was snatching off a bandage. The draft in the room collided with the neatly folded clothes, releasing the scent I'll always associate with Olive. If you were to ask me what it smelled like, I couldn't answer any more than you would know what to say if someone asked you to describe the fragrance of coffee. It was the scent of my mother, and it couldn't be broken down into parts. I lifted up a flowered scarf and held it to my face. Pressure amassed behind my eyes, but nothing came. I inhaled deep from the cloth in my hand, and the strain became heavier, almost a headache, but the cry wouldn't come. I tried to fold the scarf, but it looked rolled up, and I didn't want to disrupt the orderly stacks. A clutch of papers fastened with a green rubber band fit into the back corner of the drawer. I gathered the little stack and took it back to the kitchen where Big Roy was waiting.
You never cleared out her things?
I couldn't see the purpose, he said. Not like I needed the extra room. I took the rubber band off the bundle. On the top was my birth certificate, indicating that I was a Negro male born alive in Alexandria, Louisiana. My original name was on it, Othaniel Walter Jenkins. Olive's signature is small and cramped, like the letters were hiding behind one another. Underneath that was the revised document with my new name and Big Roy's signature laid down in a flourish of blue ink, and my mother's handwriting is loopy and girlish. The first page of the bank book showed a $50 deposit the year I was born and $50 every year thereafter. The deposits picked up when I was 14 and I added $10 every month. When I was 16, I pulled down $75 to get the passport I now held in my hand. Opening the little blue booklet, I gazed at the black and white photo taken at the post office in Alexandria. Turning my eyes back on the bank book, I noted the withdrawal I made after high school. $745 to take to college, leaving a $187 balance. With more than 10 years of interest, there was probably a little more. Maybe enough to get me to Atlanta without having to shake down my father, an old man Wycliffe. I didn't get up right away. One more item remained in the bundle. A little notebook that I had sworn was leather, but time showed it to be vinyl. It was the journal Mr. Fontenot had given me when I thought I was going to be like James Baldwin. I hadn't written more than a handful of entries. Mostly I wrote about trying to get the passport, about buying the money order, and me and Roy going up to Alexandria to get my picture made. The last entry said, "Dear History, the world needs to get ready for Roy Othaniel Hamilton, Jr." There are too many loose ends in the world in need of knots. You can't attend to all of them, but you have to try. That's what Big Roy said to me while he was cutting my hair that Monday afternoon. He didn't have a set of clippers, so he was doing it the old school way, scissors over comb. The metallic slicing was loud in my ears, reminding me of the time before I knew that a boy could have more than one father.
This was back when the words in the front of the Bible told a whole story, when we were a family of three.
Anything you want to tell me?
No, sir, I said, my voice squeaking.
What was that?
Big Roy laughed.
You sound like you're 4 years old.
It's a scissors, I said. Reminds me of when I was little.
When I met Olive, you had one word you could say, which was no. When I came courting your mother, you would holler no whenever I got near and ball up your little fist. But she made it clear to me that what she was offering was a package deal. You and her. I teased her and said, what if I only want the kid? She blushed when I said that, and even you stopped fighting me. Once you gave your seal of approval, she started coming around to the idea of being my wife. You see, even before she said it, I knew that you were the one I was going to have to ask for her hand. A big-headed baby. I was just out of the service. Just back. I met Olive at the meeting three. My landlady pushed me to steer clear. For one, she was trying to find husbands for her own daughters. Might have been six of them. So she whispered to me, you know Olive has a baby. Like she was telling me she had typhus. But that made me want to meet her more. I don't like it when folks mutter against other folks. 6 months later, we were married at the courthouse with you riding our hip. As far as I was concerned, you were my son. You will always be my son. I nodded because I knew the story. I had even told it to Walter. When you changed my name, I asked, did it confuse me? You could barely talk.
But I was old enough to know my name. How long did it take me to straighten it out in my mind?
No time at all. It started as a promise to Olive, but you're my son. You're the only family I have left now. Have you ever felt like you didn't have a father? Has there ever been one time when you felt like I didn't do all I could do?
The scissors stopped their clacking, and I swiveled in the chair to face Big Roy. His lips were tucked under, and his jaw was tight. Who told you? I asked.
Olive.
Who told her?
Celestial, Big Roy said.
Celestial?
She was here when your mother was in hospice care. We had the hospital bed set up in the den so your mother could look at TV. Celestial was by herself, not with Andre. That's when she gave Olive the doll she wanted so bad, the one that favors you. Olive wasn't getting enough oxygen, even with the mask on. Still, your mama was fighting, hanging tough. It was terrible to watch. I didn't want to tell you about all this, son. They say it was quick. 2 months from when they tested her, she was gone. What we call Jack Ruby cancer. But it was a slow 2 months. I'll say this for Celestial. She came twice. The first time was when she first got the news. Celestial drove all night and Olive was sitting up in bed, more tired than sick. She came back again, right at the end. On the last time, Celestial asked me to leave the room. I thought she was helping Olive clean up or something. After about 15 minutes, the door opened and Celestial held her purse like she was leaving. Olive was lying in the bed so still and quiet that I was scared that she had passed. Then I heard that struggling breathing. On her forehead was a shiny place where Celestial kissed her goodbye. After that, I coaxed Olive into letting me give her a dose of morphine. I squirted it under her tongue, and then she said, Nathaniel is in there with him. This wasn't her last words, but it was the last thing she said that really mattered. Then, 2 days after, she was gone. Before Celestial's visit, she was fighting it. She wanted to live. But after that, she gave up.
Celestial promised to keep it to herself. Why would she do something like that? Big Roy said,
I have no idea.
Andre, when I was 16, I tried to fight my father because I thought Evie was going to die. The doctors had said this was it, that lupus had finally gotten her. So we were going through the phases of grief and double time, trying to come out the other side before the clock ran out.
I got as far as anger and drove to Carlos's house and punched his jaw as he worked in his front yard, clipping the shrubbery into globes. His son, my brother, I guess you would call him, tried to jump in and help, but he was small and I pushed him to the grass. Evie is dying, I said to my father, who refused to lift his fists to hit me back. I punched him again, this time in the chest, and when I pulled my arm back again, he blocked the blow, but he didn't strike me. Instead, he shouted my name, freezing me in place. My little brother was on his feet now, looking from me to our father, awaiting instructions. Carlos, in an affectionate tone I'd never heard from him, said, "Go in the house, Tyler." Then, to me, he said, "Time you wasted driving over here and fighting me, you could be spending with Evie." I said, "That's all you have to say about it?" He spread his hands like suffer the little children. At his neck I made out the glint of a braided chain. Hidden under his shirt was a gold disc the size of a quarter. His mother had given it to him a lifetime ago, and he never took it off.
"What do you want me to say?"
He asked the question mildly, like he actually wanted to know. And it was a good question. After all these years, what could he say? That he was sorry? "I want you to say that you don't want her to die."
"Jesus, boy, no, I don't want Evie to die. I always assumed that eventually we would work it out, get back to being friends some kind of way. I thought that down the line we could patch things up. She's a remarkable woman. Look at yourself. She raised you. I'll always owe her for that."
I know it's a very humble declaration, but it felt like a gift. A week later, Evie rallied and was moved out of ICU to a regular room on the hospital's third floor. On her night table rested a cheery bouquet, a half dozen pink roses and some green leaves. She invited me to read the card. "Feel better. Sincerely, Carlos." After that, things between us improved a little. Out of kindness, he now extends invitations to holiday dinners. And out of kindness, I refuse. Any day now, I should receive a Christmas card, and tucked inside will be a chipper letter from his wife. I don't read these annual bulletins. I can't stomach her reports on how healthy and thriving her children are. I don't begrudge them anything, but I don't know them. This is one thing I envied Roy, his dad. It wasn't that I had never seen anybody with a responsible father before. After all, I grew up right next door to Celestial and Mr. Davenport. But a man who is a father to a daughter is different from one who is a father to a son. One is the left shoe, and the other is the right. They are the same, but not interchangeable. I don't think about Carlos all the time, like some kind of tragic black man who grew up without a daddy and is warped for life. Evie did right by me, and I'm a basically solid person. But sitting behind the steering wheel of my truck, stranded in the middle lane of an 8-lane highway, I wanted to talk to my dad. Roy Hamilton was out of prison 7 years early. Not that this changed the dynamic tremendously, but the accelerated clock churned my guts and spun my head. I longed for a mentor, or maybe a coach. When I was a kid, Mr. Davenport would step in from time to time, but now he acts like he can't stand my face. Evie clucked her tongue and said that no man likes the rusty butt who is laying up next to his daughter. I tried to explain to her that it was deeper than that. Evie said, "Was he loving all over Roy before he got sent away?" No, he hadn't been, but that was irrelevant. Now Mr. Davenport was loyal to Roy above his own daughter. In a way, the whole black race was loyal to Roy, a man just down from the cross. "Stop by any time," my father had said casually last year when I ran into him and his wife in Kroger on Cascade Road. He was pushing a buggy heaped with chicken, ribs, Irish potatoes, brown sugar, red soda pop, and everything else you need for a barbecue. He saw me before I saw him, or else we never would have talked. As his wife conveniently drifted off to the salad bar, Carlos placed his hand on my arm and said, "It has been too long." How does this happen to family? I've seen the pictures. There I am, riding on his shoulders, afro like little Michael Jackson. I remember day-to-day things like him teaching me how to pee without splashing the floor. I even recall the sting of his belt against my legs, but not often. He used to be my father, and now we never talk at all. it occurs to me that maybe a man can love his son only as much as he loves the mother. But no, that couldn't be true. He was my father. I wasn't his junior, but I wore his last name as easily as I wore my own skin. You're always welcome in my home, he had said. And so I decided to take him at his word. I don't believe that blood makes a family. Kin is the circle you create, hands held tight. There is something to share genetics, but the question is, what exactly is that something? It matters that I didn't grow up with my father. It's kind of like having one leg that's a half inch shorter than the other. You can walk, but there will be a dip. Carlos lives on Brownlee Road, in a house almost identical to the one where he lived with my mother and me. It was like he wanted the same life, but with different people. His wife, Jeanette, even favored Evie a little bit, red bone with a generous build. When they first got married, Jeanette somehow managed to make a living making ice sculptures for weddings and such. Back then, she had been much younger than Evie, but after all these years, their ages have come together in that uncanny way of passing time. Carlos answered the door shirtless, with his bald head covered with shaving foam. As he used a nubby towel to blot his forehead, the gold St. Christopher medal gleamed bright against his dark chest hair.
Andre, everything okay, my man?
Yeah, I said. I was wondering if I could talk to you right quick. When he paused, I added, you said I could come by any time. He opened the door wide to let me in.
Of course, come on in, I'm getting dressed.
Then he announced to whoever was home,
Andre's here.
I stepped inside and was met with the scent of breakfast. Bacon, coffee, and something sweet, like cinnamon buns. Before me in the foyer stood a Christmas tree, pine-scented and littered with shiny silver balls. Already, dozens of glittery gifts rested upon a red cloth trimmed in white, like Santa Claus. And like a child, I worried that there wasn't a present there for me. Then, like an adult, I worried that I shouldn't have come by empty-handed.
Nice tree, isn't it? He said. I let Jeanette handle the decorations. I haul it in. That's all a man can do.
He bent and connected a green wire to the wall, and the tree was ablaze with white light so clean and radiant that they glowed, even in the sunny room. Just then Jeanette appeared, dressed in a kimono the color of peacocks. Arranging her hair, she said,
Hello, Andre. It's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you, too, ma'am.
Don't ma'am me, she said. We're family. Will you join us for breakfast?
No, ma'am, I said. She kissed my father on the cheek, as if to remind me that this is her house, her husband, and the father of her children. Or maybe it was affection, still blooming after all these years. Whatever it was, I felt disloyal to Evie just being there, even though my mother has been much more relaxed on the subject now that she has found true love of her own.
Come on with me while I finish up with his head, he pointed at the froth on his dome. When I was young, ladies knew me for my hair, half black and half Puerto Rican, jet black and waves for days. A little pomade and a wet comb, perfection. But now,
he sighed as if to say, nothing lasts. I trailed him through the house, which was quiet but for the pots and pans clanging in the kitchen. Where are the kids? I asked.
College, my father said. They both get in tonight.
Where did they go?
Tyler is at Oberlin and Michaela is at Duke. I tried to get them to go to black schools, but...
He shook his head as though he didn't remember agreeing to pay for my college only if I went to the school of his choice. In the bathroom, he situated himself between two mirrors and carefully scraped the foam from his head.
Michael Jordan was the best thing that ever happened to black men my age. We can shave our heads and say we're bald on purpose.
I studied our reflections in the mirror. My father was a good-sized man. There was a picture of him holding me as a newborn, and against his chest, I looked to be no bigger than a hickory nut. He must be 60 by now. His muscular bulk has softened some. On his chest, on the left side, is a keloid scar to honor his fraternity. Seeing me looking at it, my father covered it with his hand.
I'm embarrassed by this now.
I'm embarrassed that I didn't pledge, I said.
Don't be. I've learned a few things over these last 30 years.
He returned to the business of shaving his head, and I regarded myself in the mirror. It was as though God knew that Evie would end up raising me alone. So he made me entirely in her image. Wide nose, healthy lips, and hair the color of cardboard, but nappy as Africa. The only trait I picked up from my father was cheekbones that jutted like collarbones.
So, he said, stretching the word out like a drum roll, what's on your mind?
I'm getting married, I said.
Who is the lucky lady?
I stumbled, surprised that he didn't know, probably in the same way he was surprised that I didn't know where his kids were in college. Celestial. Celestial Davenport.
Aha, he said. I peeped that when you were babies. Did she grow up fine like her mama? But wait a minute. Wasn't she married to some dude that ended up being a rapist? Morehouse cat. Was he Greek?
But he was innocent.
Who said he was innocent? Her? If he's still claiming he didn't do it, then you have a real problem.
Meeting my eyes in the mirror, he adopted a thoughtful tone.
Forgive me for being such a straight shooter. Nowadays, they say it's being direct. But your mama called it being an asshole.
He chuckled.
I've been down here in the South 38 years, but I still run my mouth like a New Yorker.
When he said New Yorker, he switched his accent like he was speaking a word in another language. You don't have all the details, I said, feeling defensive of both Celestial and Roy. That's what I'm here to tell you about. The lawyer got his conviction overturned. He's out right now. I'm on my way to Louisiana to see him. My father put down the razor, rinsed it at the sink. He closed the lid on the toilet and sat upon it like a throne. He beckoned, so I sat opposite him on the rim of the spacious bathtub.
And you're talking about marrying his ex-wife. I see the challenge.
She's not his ex-wife, I said. Not technically.
Whoa, doggy, Carlos said. I knew it had to be something to bring you over here to talk to me.
I told him the whole story from soup to nuts. And when I was done, my father pinched the bridge of his nose like he felt a migraine coming on.
This is my fault, he said with closed eyes. This never would have happened if you were trained up under me. I would have taught you to steer clear of a snake pit like this. There can't be a winner. First off, you should have sense enough not to mess with that man's wife. But,
he said with a courtly nod,
who am I to judge? When I got with Jeanette, I didn't have no business doing it. Evie put me out. Granted, I had some place to go, but it was her call. You know that, right? I didn't leave her.
He ran his finger over his damp head, feeling for stubbly patches that he skipped over with his razor. This isn't what I came over here for.
Then what did you come for?
Obviously, I need advice, guidance, words of wisdom, something.
Well, he said, I have been one of the legs in a love triangle, this you know. You also know that there isn't a happy ending for anyone. I miss your mother every day. We grew up together, too. But she can't be in the same room with Jeanette and...
You could have come to visit us by yourself.
Jeanette is my wife now. Then we had Tyler and Michaela. You can't say that I made a choice because your mother was the one who put me out. Don't forget that.
Enough, I said. Enough of this historical shit. She put you out because you were chasing Tail. She put you out and you married Tail. And then you want to blame it on her. What about me? I didn't put you out. I was in second grade. The air in the closed bathroom was warm, despite the noisy exhaust fan. His shaving cream smelled like cloves and made me feel nauseous. What was I even doing here? My father didn't know me. He didn't know Celestial, and he didn't know Roy. How could he steer me in the storm? From the other side of our silence, Jeanette sang,
Breakfast is ready. Come on, Dre,
my father said.
Have some eggs and bacon.
I didn't come here hoping for a seat at your table. Carlos stuck his head out into the hallway.
I'm coming, Jeanette.
Then he turned to me with a buzz of urgency like he had bought himself only another minute or so.
Let's start over, he said. You say you want my advice. Here's what I have. Tell the truth. Don't try to cushion the blow. If you're bad enough to do it, you're bad enough to tell it. You can ask your mama. She'll tell you she was so unhappy because I didn't drop lies into her morning coffee. The whole time she knew exactly who she was married to. You go let that man know what you have done, what you're still doing. That's all he's entitled to. You don't tell him with your chin on your chest. You tell him to inform him, for him to see the kind of man you are.
However, he sizes it up.
Then what do I do?
Depends on what he does. My guess is that he gets physical. I don't think he'll kill you over it. He's not trying to get reincarcerated. But son, you got a real ass whooping coming. Just take it and get on with your life.
But
here's the but, he said. The good news is that he can whip your ass all up and down the state of Louisiana, but it doesn't matter. He can't beat Celestial out of you. It's not a to the victor's proposition.
Then he laughed. I didn't.
Okay, son, I'm going to get serious. Just because I think you deserve what you're about to go to Louisiana to get, it doesn't mean that I don't wish you well with Celeste. Every relationship requires that you go through some shit.
He ran his fingers over the figure scarring his chest.
This was stupid. We branded each other like cattle, like slaves. We beat the shit out of each other. But it bound us together. I love every single one of them. When I tell you we went through it, I mean it. Maybe what has held me and Jeanette together all these years is what I had to go through and give up to be with her.
And with that, he opened the bathroom door, and we walked out into the cheerful house. In the hallway, I zipped my jacket against December and headed toward the doorway, past the twinkling tree. Something in me that was still very young hung back in case a gift was set aside, in case he had remembered me for the holidays.
"Come back Christmas," he said. "There will be a box under the tree for you."
My face burned at being so transparent, and because I shared Evie's coloring, he could see it. I turned away, but my father spun my shoulder.
"I never forgot about you," he said.
"Not during the year, and never at Christmas.
I just wasn't expecting to see you."
Then he patted his pockets like he was hoping to find something there. Downhearted, he lifted his gold necklace over his clean-shaven head.
"My ma bought it in Chinatown when I finished high school. Other boys got typewriters to take to college, or maybe a briefcase, stuff like that. And she gives me a saint. Saint Christopher's for safe travels, and Buena Suerte for bachelors."
He kissed the engraved face before holding it out to me.
"I hate that you didn't get to meet her. There is nothing like a Puerto Rican grandmother. A summer or two in East Harlem would have got you right."
He bounced the gold in his palm like dice.
"Look, it's yours. It says so in my will, but I don't see why you have to wait."
My father took my wrist and forced the jewelry into my hand, squeezing my fingers around it with so much force, it hurt.
Roy. Goodbye isn't my strong suit. I'm more of a see-you-later kind of person. When I left prison, I didn't even say goodbye to Walter. He picked a fight on the yard and got himself put into the SHU the day before my release. As I gathered all my belongings and stacked it all on Walter's side of the cell, I wondered if maybe goodbye wasn't his forte either. Missing him in advance, I wrote a note on the first page of the notebook I was leaving behind. "Dear Walter, when the door is open, you have to run through it. I will stay in touch. You have been a good father to me these years. Your son, Roy." Before this, I'd never called myself his son. I meant it, but I was struck by a silly fear that Big Roy would find out, or even that Olive would know from the grave. But I let the note stay put. On his pillow, I left a picture that Celestial sent of me and her on a beach in Hilton Head. Other men had pictures of their kids. Why shouldn't Walter? Your son, Roy, that's who I was. Now it was time to pay my respects to Olive, down at what used to be called the Colored Cemetery. This graveyard dated back to the 1800s, right after slavery ended. Mr. Fontenot took me here once to rub etchings off the crumbling tombstones. Now, he was under this ground himself. There were other places to be buried. These days, cemeteries are integrated along with everything else. But I never knew of anyone who didn't choose to lay their family down at Greater Rest Memorial. Big Roy sent me on my way with a big bouquet of yellow flowers wrapped with green holiday ribbon. I drove the Chrysler along the potholed road in the middle of the cemetery and stopped when the pavement ended. Exiting the car, I walked 10 paces to the east and then 6 to the south, with my flowers behind my back like it was Valentine's Day. I passed trendy grave markers engraved with the likeness of the person buried below. These stones were shiny like Cadillacs, and the faces transferred onto rock were almost all young guys. I paused at one, covered with pink lipstick kisses,
and did the math in my head. 15 years old. I thought of Walter again. 6 or 12, he sometimes said when he was depressed, which wasn't all the time, but often enough that I recognized